Become our friend on Facebook. Post on our wall your thoughts about our shows and network. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The health of our nation is no longer about personal choices. Obesity and disease affects us all, as they also affect the bottom line of all businesses, large and small. Welcome to Investing in the Future, Creating Wealth Through Health, with your host, Susan Doherty. With all kinds of healthcare changes in the news and affecting businesses today, you can't afford not to listen today. And now, here's Susan Doherty.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Investing in the Future. With the ACA kicking in, companies around the country are putting pen to paper trying to figure out their best options, you know, with their own health programs. It's economical to, you know, is it more economical to cancel the employee insurance and pay a fine, allowing the employees to go on exchanges? Hopefully by now, most of the employers know their answers. And I think by and large, most companies are opting to continue offering coverage because not only is it the right thing to do for the employees, it's also a way to stay competitive. You know, from there, the questions are how to maximize that investment. As medical costs continue to rise, employers must, you know, find ways to lower their costly utilization. And notice I didn't say utilization, I said costly utilization. Because obviously, you know, some utilization is a good thing. Preventative care, for instance. Going to a doctor when you're ill, especially before illness turns to disease, is a good thing. Underutilization can also be costly. I remember one time seeing a data report that showed an employee utilizing the emergency room 21 times over a short period of time for migraines. And I think that's probably, for at least for an emergency room, a serious overutilization. You know, however, you know, by ignoring early warning signs and not visiting doctors, you know, heart disease and diabetes can set in, and that is very costly, you know, to the employer, to the employee, and to the family of that individual. So the ACA has put provisions in place so that employers can start or expand their wellness offerings. But where to begin or turn for help? You know, one place is to turn to the carrier itself. You know, carriers have a vested interest in the health of your employees, one way or the other. They know your metrics, and they have programs that you know, can help with wellness and disease management. You know, but there are some drawbacks to utilizing the carrier, and we'll discuss some of those today. Another place to go is to your broker. And a broker is the retail side of the insurance. You know, they can help you gather your employee information, identify your risk, research your carrier options. They can help you negotiate rates and advise you on compliance issues. And they can help with employee policies and communications as well. So increasingly, they help employers with their wellness programming. And one such broker is InterCare Insurance Solutions. InterCare has been leading the way for many years. They have made wellness a cornerstone of their business model and have one of the best wellness consulting teams in the country. I have with me here today John Kale. John is a Senior Vice President and Chief Wellness Officer at InterCare Insurance Solutions. In his role, he provides the leadership necessary to ensure that benefits plans offered by InterCare continually enhance employee health and workforce productivity. He's an expert in the design and implementation of wellness programming, funding options that effectively control benefits costs while supporting a more value-based approach to employee benefits. And he uses these strengths to help employers shift their paradigm and focus on employee benefits as an investment rather than as a cost. John's expertise in value-based benefits has garnered invitations to several speaking engagements, including World Congress forums around the country. John has more than 30 years of experience in the insurance industry with an emphasis on employee benefits. Prior to joining InterCare Organization, John was founder and president of SFG Benefit Insurance Services. InterCare and SFG merged in October 2006, and the combined company continued under the InterCare name. And John took on his current leadership role. His innovative approach to healthcare through integrated wellness programs began early in his career when he received a $250,000 research grant from Anthem Blue Cross to develop preventative and wellness programs. He has implemented more than 75 successful corporate wellness programs that have saved sponsor companies millions of dollars. John was named 2008's Employer Benefit Advisor of the Year by Employee Benefit Advisor. He also was recognized as a 2010 Benefit Power Broker by Risk and Insurance Magazine. John is a member of the Pfizer and Abbott Labs Corporate Advisory Panels and leads the research and development for the design, structure, and delivery of innovative employee benefits concepts. He has a Bachelor of Arts degree from Heidelberg College. Hi, John. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Susan. How are you?
I am well, thank you. I'd like to start like this. Okay, first off, more than 30 years in the wellness industry, I wasn't even aware of wellness back then from a company standpoint. So you were obviously on the leading edge of that. I did a little research, and the first real wellness program that I was able to come up with was by a large employer anyway, was done by Boeing. In 1984, they set a plan to make their facility smoke-free within 10 years, and they pretty much succeeded at that. But prior to that, the big thing in employee physicals. You know, some employers were using, Kimberly-Clark was one, and they were beginning to work those in for their employees. But other than that, like in 1982, Jane Fonda's workout became a blockbuster, and that's when the fitness craze kicked in. But you were doing something much more important. You know, tell me a little bit about your early career.
Sure. I'm originally from Ohio, and Dee Eddington is one of the common names that always surfaces as one of the early adopters and early leaders in wellness. Was at the University of Michigan. I was in Toledo, Ohio, which is only about a 45-minute drive. And I had a client that was about 800 employees, 900 employees, in small manufacturing plants throughout the Northwest Ohio, and basically United Auto Worker, UAW, and we devised a program with the CEO and the CFO of this particular company to do biometric screenings and actually did a venous puncture, and we gave incentives and et cetera, and what we found out after we got the data, and we had a fairly high participation rate because we gave, you know, incentives, but what we found out was that we really had a smoking problem. And in doing the venous puncture, we tested for serum cotinine, which is a byproduct of nicotine. And so we could see that we had a higher than normal participation rate from a smoking standpoint. And we also could see that we, because of the serum cotinine level, we could tell what percentage we had of secondary smoke. So this was 1990, 91, and early 92, and we went to the union eventually and said, we're going to go to non-smoking manufacturing UAW facilities. And they, of course, said, no, you're not. And we went to arbitration, and about the same time is when the EPA said that secondary smoke is a Class A carcinogen. So that helped us in terms of our position. We eventually won in arbitration. We were the first plant in the United States, UAW, that we know of, that went to a non-smoking manufacturing plant. So that kind of got us started. And from there, as you mentioned, I got a grant from Blue Cross, and then ultimately did a whole variety of different programs along the way. And, you know, we've made had some great successes, had some colossal failures, and really kind of, you know, kind of cut our teeth on wellness for a good 20 years. And then we had a paradigm shift. Probably 7 or 8 years ago in the whole wellness arena. And that was wellness became a investment as opposed to an expense. And that was based on the work of Sean Sullivan and his group out of IHPM, Institute for Health and Productivity Management. And so once that paradigm shifted, that is, healthcare employers looked at healthcare as an investment, basically to increase productivity. Once that happened, their questions changed. Their questions went to what's the value, not so much of what's the cost. Cost is always important, and cost is always part of the equation. But what's the value? How do you deliver value? Well, the insurance industry has a hard time with that. They can tell you what cost is, going from a $20 copay to a $30 copay. They can tell you that. But they can't tell you really what is the value. Do you get better compliance with a $20 copay? So the other thing that happened around that same time was Pitney Bowes had their 15-year experiment about value-based benefits. And those two things hit about the same time, about 7-8 years ago. That started the new version, if you will, of wellness programs in the United States. And it's been fun ever since then, because it is emerging, it's changing, it's edgy, and you're going to see more changes coming in the future. So that kind of gives you kind of a quick history of my involvement with wellness.
So, this is one of those cases where the government actually stepped in and did you a favor?
Yeah, I don't think it was intentional, obviously, for us. In essence, you're correct. The EPA said secondary smoke is class A carcinogen. And we were talking to our employer at that time that had manufacturing plants and said we need to go smoke-free because it's affecting everybody. And so it was kind of coincidental, but yet very important. And they did.
So that's kind of done this trending thing. And so going from like the Pitney Bowes, you said kind of the changeover, and from there, are you seeing more? I mean, do you still see pushback from employers saying, we don't know about this data, or most employers, especially coming to you? I would think that the ones coming to talk to you about it, they are interested, they're invested, and they understand the investment of their programs.
Yeah, I would say that the vast majority of employers, and in our marketplace here in San Diego, we are in what's called the mid-market. That's 100 employees to 2,000 employees, and that's the mid-market anywhere in the country. And they're basically underserved. What a lot of people don't know is that, according to the Department of Labor, 80% of the people in the United States are employed by employers that have less than 2,000 employees. Now, all the news hits the General Electrics and the General Motors and, all that kind of thing. But really, the vast majority of employees are in companies that have less than 2,000 employees. Now, they're underserviced. They're underserved. They're generally stretched pretty thin. And they're all looking for reasons to mitigate their increases in health care. So there's varying degrees. You have your innovators. You have your early adopters. You have those that are mainstream. But I would say in today's world, there's very few employers that will not discuss wellness. They all want to have the topic of wellness. Now, if you ask 10 different employers what their definition of wellness is, you get 10 different definitions. So it's a matter of trying to educate them as to what's important. Is clinical data important? Is participation important? Is penetration important? And so you have those early discussions, and you ferret out pretty quickly what their level of tolerance is, what their level of enthusiasm is, what their level of passion is around wellness. And I would say we're seeing more and more and more companies saying, yes, we want to get involved. Yes, we want to change or enhance our culture, because that's really where the best practices are. Those companies that have really good wellness programs are because it's part of their culture. And so it takes a while to get there. Wellness is not a sprint; it's a marathon, and it's something that you have to, have a long-term game plan. You have to have a 2-3-4-year strategy, implement, course correct along the way. But most employers today want to talk about some form of wellness, basically for the reason of productivity. They want their employees to be more productive, and that means again a lot of things to a lot of people.
That is definitely the productivity aspect of it. I think that is really what's coming around with employers. They're starting to see that unhealthy employees are less than productive, whether they're at work and just not able to function as well, or they're missing work. So that's what I'm seeing as well. I hear that a lot in the companies that I've worked with. I see that. So want to move on from this, because I think we have a lot to talk about,
sure.
But we're just coming up at a great point for a break.
Okay.
So before we kind of take what we've just discussed, looking backwards and how it's grown, especially for you and your background and where that came from, because I do find that fascinating that you've been in the wellness industry for so long. So when we come back, we're going to do a little fast forward and kind of look at the wellness challenges of today and what the employers are doing and how you guys are helping, how InnerCare is helping move that forward. So we'll be back with you in just a moment. Thank you.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
As your business grows, are you growing with it? Do you have the right balance of time, attention, work, and personal life? Take the growing pains out of growth and tune into The Business Edge with Marcia Zeidel. If you are spending most of your energy managing problems rather than focusing on taking your business to the next level, our program will give you the steps you need to make sure you have everything in place for forward-thinking business leadership. The Business Edge is heard every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
Social media is growing at an astounding rate. In just virtually 5 short years, we have seen YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter take the world by storm. How do you effectively make social media work for you? Tune in to The Social Universe with host Kurt Wilhelm. We'll show you how to market your business or yourself to get ahead, especially in unstable economic times. We'll also discuss practices that you can apply to increase visibility and revenue as you unlock the mysteries of the social universe. The Social Universe is broadcast live every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're tuned in to Investing in the Future, Creating Wealth Through Health with Susan Doherty. Got a question or comment today? Please call into the show at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to Susan at thehealthywell.com. Now, back to Investing in the Future, Creating Wealth Through Health.
Welcome back. I am here with John Kale, Chief Wellness Officer at InnerCare Insurance Solutions. And there are two things that I like about that statement that I like. One, even though spelled differently, John Kale. I mean, your name just sounds healthy. And then I love, of course, Chief Wellness Officer. Perfect title. So we just covered the early beginnings of corporate wellness and the movement and John's early role. And we were just discussing some of the current industry trends. So, John, I know you have your finger on the pulse of what's going on out there. What are the trends and how are they leading us for the future?
Well, there are several things that are happening. As I said, wellness continues to emerge. Technology is now playing a role in wellness. Better data is playing a role. So let me give you just a few of the best practices, of some of the companies that we have that have been into wellness 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and have really committed to it in a variety of ways, not only the C-suite, your CEO and CFO and so forth, but one of the things that is one of the keys of success that many times is overlooked is that your middle managers must buy into the program. Your C-suite buys in quickly because they see it as a form of return of their investment. They see it as a good thing for their company. But if your middle managers don't buy in, your program will fail. And so you have to spend time with them. You have to make them part of the solution. You have to engage them. So middle management is a key in terms of success of wellness programs. One of the other things is that we're seeing more and more clinical data. And when you're in the mid-market, the 200, 500, 800,000 employee base, many times you don't get the claims data that you would get as larger companies. And so you have to arrive at data in some other fashion. We do just a tremendous amount of biometric screenings on a yearly basis. We build our own database because we don't want to give up the data to any carrier or anyone else. So we build our own database that our employers have access to. We measure year-over-year cohort reporting, meaning that if we had 500 people take biometrics a year ago, what does those people who are left of the 500, let's say there's 450 of them, what do they look like the second year? And so we can measure, are we having success from a clinical standpoint? And that becomes very important because we use that in terms of negotiations with the insurance companies. And it's not how we feel about things. It's not how we think about things. It's actually clinical data, and that's important. Data is becoming a huge issue in wellness programs. All kinds of data. And the more data you can have, the better. And then you have to make the data meaningful and relevant. We call ourselves data junkies. We cannot get enough data, no matter what it is, around that particular group, because we want to do what we call population health management. One of the other trends that's emerging, and is really kind of interesting, is that you're having individually designed wellness programs. Now, this is for the company that's in its third year, fourth year, fifth year, and it's part of their culture. So picture this, Susan. You've got two employees sitting next to each other in cubes, and they're basically doing the same thing. But one is a 45-year-old male who is morbidly obese, and sitting next to him is a 32-year-old female that runs marathons. And so here's the company that says, here's your wellness program. And it really cannot be one size fits all. So you have to have elements within your wellness program that allows each of these people, and then as you can imagine, 500 different or 1,000 different personalities, to ultimately design their own wellness program. One that fits them, fits their needs, fits their wants, and then ultimately lends itself to better health. So individually designed wellness programs are becoming more popular. The other thing that we're seeing is as employers understand wellness more and understand how it affects their culture, we're seeing them, the employers, come up with programs that are very unique. We have one client, about 700 employees, and they decided what they want to do for this year, for one of their emphasis this year, was to deal with the credit card debt of their employees. So they did a survey. Obviously anonymous, did a survey, got aggregate data and said, this is how many employees we have. Here's the credit card debt. Here's the average amount of credit card debt that employees have. And we're going to spend time trying to lower that because we know that that's a matter of stress, therefore depression, therefore overeating, et cetera. So they made the link of credit card debt to wellness. And it was kind of unusual, and they're having great success with that. They brought in speakers, and they've given educational information and so forth. And they're measuring part of their success in their wellness program by the reduction of credit card debt of their employees. So we've got a lot of those different kinds of programs that are very unusual. Let me give you one more that's kind of, you know, outside the box. Have a manufacturer, a light plastics manufacturer, basically a middle-aged female employee group. That's their kind of the way they look. And they came to us maybe 6 or 8 months ago and said, we would like to understand how menopause affects you in the workplace. Kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah, and so you wouldn't think of that as a wellness program, but yet it is. How does menopause affect you in the workplace, and what can you do to, you know, to help mitigate some of the effects, et cetera. So there are a lot of employers who now have bought in and made it part of the culture that are really changing some of the things going forward.
So that is cool. I like, you know, that they're reaching out, they're understanding what their own population is, and they're starting to think in those terms. I have heard a lot about financial wellness being incorporated into the wellness programming because, as you said, it has a lot to do with the stress of the employees, and stress leads to all kinds of other issues wellness-wise and health-wise. So I think but I haven't heard the credit card story. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. We have another one they're in probably their fourth year, and again, part of their culture. And they have said to their middle managers, when you have a meeting, if you bring into the meeting donuts, we're not going to reimburse you because you are not being a good steward of the company money. Now, that's a heck of a statement. And so, you know, do you buy the fruit? Do you buy the nuts? And et cetera. Yeah, I mean, you get the picture that it has gone to the point now where they're not reimbursing for things that are not healthy. And but they wouldn't have been able to do that 4 years ago. today it's accepted.
It's accepted and, yeah. and even applauded.
Yeah, exactly.
I applaud.
yeah, sure.
So, okay, as we look forward, you and I have talked before, and you have mentioned the whys, whats, and hows of wellness and for employers and what those what the questions are and what the answers are. Obviously there are numbers of reasons why employers need to be concerned about their less than healthy employee population. But what are today's whys, and how has that answer changed over the past 30 years of your career?
Yeah, great question. The whys are almost dependent on the employer themselves. Most of them will start with the same kind of first opening discussion. We want to reduce the cost of healthcare because it has been an important issue for them, and has continued to move up the line in terms of the line item and where does it stand relative to their budgets. So that's part of it. Why do you want wellness? What we find out is what they tell us originally, and then what we finally get to are generally not the same thing. And it's because they haven't been exposed to it and really don't know the right questions to ask their own leadership team. So we talk about productivity. We talk about the cost of healthcare. We talk about, how does wellness affect your workers' comp rates? What happens with a workers' comp claim if, in fact, you are a healthier company? Can you use that? Here's our wellness program. Can you use that to negotiate with your workers' comp company for better rates? What about your EAP? Your EAP program, you want an increasing use of your EAP, not a decreasing use. And it's counterintuitive. Normal usage of an EAP is between 4 and 5%. We try to get our clients to almost 15% because we know it's a small cost item, but we know the higher percentage we get of EAP usage, that the lower we're going to get in terms of depression and stress drugs. So it works in, almost, as I said, counterintuitively. So there's just a lot of different things that you can talk through with the employer, and what comes out is then their vision of what they look like. That's now becoming the why. The why is almost always around productivity of some kind and cost of healthcare. And the ones who are really leading the pack, the innovators and the early adopters, understand that it's a long-term process. So they'll have 2 and 3 and 4 year strategies down the road, which in wellness has been very unusual, and in benefits is unusual because you renew every year, and so therefore you have a 1 year strategy as opposed to a 4 year strategy. So that's the why. The what is really, again, depending upon how quickly they want to go. We almost always inevitably get to biometric screening. And again, the reason for that is it gives an awareness to the employee, and it gives clinical data that we can measure year over year to measure the effectiveness of the programs we're putting in. So that becomes one of the things that we look at. One of the other things we're doing, and we just really, after 2 years' worth of research, we're just starting to do what we call patient activation measurement. This is a series of 10 questions that tells us where that person is, where that employee is, in their consumption of healthcare. Where do they stand? Are they a level 1, 2, 3, or 4? Level ones, depending on how they answer these questions, level ones consider themselves to be victims. They're victims of the system. Therefore, their costs are 80% higher than a level 4. A level 4 is a problem solver. So, and 2s and 3s are obviously in between. Wellness programs have been designed for 3s and 4s when they should actually be designed for 1s and 2s because that's where your cost is, and you have to have the 1s move to 2s and 2s to 3s and 3s to 4s. 4s want resources. 1s want their handheld. And so you have to educate the 1s in order to become better consumers. Their commonality? Lacking of self-confidence.
I want to stop you right here because sure. I am fascinated by this subject here and looking at the you know, kind of flipping the wellness talk and the information on its head, if you will.
Sure.
And going after the other one. We're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to delve more into this fascinating subject.
Okay,
stay with
great.
Me. We'll be right back.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio. Voice America Business Network.
In sales, are you a lion or a vulture? Lions don't wait, they just go for it. Vultures hang around until the lions are finished and just pick up the scraps. How can you set yourself apart as a lion? Join the other aspiring sales lions and listen to Forget Patience, Let's Sell Something with host Ty Maynor. You'll learn the tips and strategies of top sales professionals. You'll gain more clients at a faster rate and at higher margins. If you're a sales professional, business owner, or executive, listen in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Are you and your business well prepared? For what, you may ask? Well, what about workplace violence, cyber attacks, or general business disasters? Listen for Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101 with your host, Pamela Hill. We'll bring you case studies of the businesses that don't prepare and the consequences that can happen. We'll also bring you best practice strategies that can help you keep your business running smoothly. Tune in to Fear is Negotiable, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're tuned in to Investing in the Future, Creating Wealth Through Health with Susan Doherty. Got a question or comment today? Please call into the show at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to Susan at thehealthywell.com. Now, back to Investing in the Future, Creating Wealth Through Health.
Welcome back. We're here with John Kale, and he was just giving us a background and talking about a program that they have in place that they use with their employer populations called PAM. John, if you'll explain that briefly again, and then I'd like to hear more about that. I mean, one thing I like about it is that instead of, like you said, instead of taking wellness and promoting it to the healthiest group and keeping them healthy, which we, you know, obviously needs to be done. We want to keep the healthy healthy, but really looking at the sicker population and finding ways to help them improve their health. So sure. Explain a little bit more about that.
Sure. PAM has, as I said, been around for a while, but it's generally been used as a coaching tool. So if somebody has disease management through a particular coaching company or, you know, that type of thing, they'll ask those questions to be able to message to the people in a different manner. We decided to re-engineer it and do it on the front end. And so we're doing a PAM to get started because we want to know, you know, what percentage of our people are ones, twos, threes, and fours. And the reason we do that is because then you have to message your program and your content in a different manner. So let me give you an example. If you have a one who's a diabetic and you say to that one who's a diabetic, listen, we're going to help you with your A1C counts. We're going to help you with your insulin moderation, we're going to help you with your diet and so forth, you've just lost them. They're done. And the message has to be, how can we help you, Miss or Mr. Diabetic? What's your needs today? And so it becomes a different style of coaching and a different style of messaging. The fours, who's a diabetic, all they want are resources. You want to give them all the resources, and here's your website for this, and here's an article about this. Some of the content the same, but the messaging is completely different. So the ones will have more readmissions to the hospital. They have less compliance. They'll have more usage in terms of high what we call low value claims. You know, they're just not good consumers, and they have to start becoming better consumers. So here's just a couple, and then we can move on to another subject. One of the things that's so interesting in doing our research, and as I said, we've spent 24 months in researching this, talked to all kinds of people across the country and et cetera, Here's what's interesting. The commonality between ones, twos, threes, and fours is there is no commonality. You could have it cuts across all educational level, all income levels, all job description levels. You can have a $200,000 a year PhD that's a one, and a $30,000 a year food server that's a four. And so what we found out is in talking to coaches that use this and people that have used this, again, as a one-on-one, that they really didn't know. They thought they knew what people were, but they didn't until they looked at this test. And so it gave them a tool to assess where people were, and then they can moderate and change and message differently so they can make impact. It's really about health literacy and about accountability of the individual. So that's kind of the PAM story. So we're using that. We're always trying to be on the edge of what is out there from a prospect of usability, what's relevant, what's efficient, what's effective. And so we are constantly evaluating what we're doing. That doesn't mean we throw out the old because it's old. It means that we measure things on an ongoing basis, and that is the most effective, that's what we use. So we have, I can't tell you how many wellness programs we have in place right now, a bunch. Not two of them are alike. Now, they have some commonalities, but not every one of them is different because every company is different.
Sure, you take your benchmarks and work out from there.
That's correct. Well, you start with what does the employer want to accomplish? What's their vision? And you have to have a discussion about it with them, and then you start to conform your programs around what their vision is, and then you course correct along the way. But you have to have a vision of what you want to accomplish.
That's probably a good conversation right up there. Not only finding out what are your outcomes you're looking for, because better health is going to be one of them, but what are the values of the company? What kind of support and how can we help you support in the communications?
Well, Susan, there's another thing that's happened that was really interesting, and that is that I mentioned the two paradigm shifts, that from expense to investment and the value base. There's another paradigm shift that took place and is really becoming more prevalent, and that is healthcare as a business strategy. And this is now where the CFOs have gotten involved, because it has climbed up the ladder in terms of, is it our third line item, fourth line item, fifth line item in terms of expense. So it's gotten higher and higher, and it's gotten more and more attention. And so now it's become healthcare as a business strategy. Let me give you one example. I have an employer, about 500 employees, and then they're in the acquisition mode. They want to acquire other companies. They've got some money behind them, and they got a great business model. And one of the factors that they take into account is what is the cost of the company they're acquiring? What is the per employee per year cost of healthcare? Because they, the company that's doing the acquiring, has invested a lot of money and time, effort, energy in building their wellness program. They know that they're doing it really a good job in terms of their per employee per year cost. And if they see a company they're going to acquire that is considerably more than what they are where they're at, they know that they can reduce their acquisition cost by having healthcare as a business strategy. And so that's kind of an emerging one, kind of interesting. And very simply, if your cost from a per employee per year basis is less than your competitor, you have one of two things. You can make more money, or you can take that money and invest it in infrastructure and business development or whatever. But there is a line item. It's just like paying less for rent or less for your software or less for your hardware or less for whatever the case may be. Same thing is happening with healthcare. It's becoming part of a business strategy.
And probably well timed, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, you talked about that InnerCare is very invested in doing biometric screenings.
Yeah.
And how is that data getting out to the employees? I don't want to talk too much about this because that is the subject that I'll be speaking about next week, but I know that that's really important. And besides biometric screening, what kind of data are you bringing in that, I know that you have your huge database and you're slicing and dicing all this different data. And so besides biometric screenings, what else are you bringing into it as well as that?
Well, what we start with first and simply, and that everyone has, is the demographics of the employer and the employee base of that employer. So we just did a study the other day. We have a company, and they have several thousand employees, so you know, a larger company. And we saw that 72% of their employees were females ages 41 to 59. Well, that calls for a completely different wellness program than another company who had 60% of males under age 35. So that's a very basic data. Every company has it. It's a matter of looking at it in a different way. We look at participation. If you have a wellness program, there are basically three kinds of wellness programs or three stages. One, somebody who's tried this, who got started and has kind of failed, has gone flat. Those that want to get started, and those that have been in the program for 2 or 3 years and just want to take it to the next level. And so all three of them require a different kind of message and a different kind of involvement from our perspective. We don't have any products to sell. We are basically wellness consultants. We are not wellness vendor. So we're a consultant from a wellness perspective and helping them build their programs. So we have that data. We have the data of what's their biometrics look like. Many companies today are headed toward the outcomes-based programming. That means you get your discount off your premium based on your outcomes. And the outcomes being you have to fall within a normal range of these 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different areas, and therefore you get your discount. So it's outcomes-based programming. That's becoming more and more popular. And it's because employers want to see results. So that's another piece of data that we're looking at. We can say to you, Susan, that your company, if you had a company of 300 employees, we can say to you, what is your average systolic blood pressure? What's your average diastolic blood pressure? We can tell your average BMI. And we look at that, again, year over year, to measure the impact of wellness programs. So we can't get enough data. We take data from every place that we can get it. We do a lot of focus group work. We do a lot of survey work. So the more data we can collect, the more we know about the employer. So I hope that answered your question, but just all kinds of that. Nothing is insignificant to us from a data standpoint.
It absolutely did. So that was what I was looking for. You know, how do you slice and dice all that? And I appreciate that detailed answer. So one of the things I know that InterCare does, and is you talked about how you don't have a product to sell, but you help your clients with their wellness activities. Mm-hmm. But I also know firsthand that you help communities and the businesses that you, not that you serve specifically, but in your area. So when we come back from our break, I want to hear how InterCare supports the entire business community, and then, you know, from wellness and the communities that you serve here.
Sure.
So we're going to take a quick break. And oh, did you have something to say? I'm sorry.
No, I said sure. I'll be happy to do that.
Oh, okay. Thanks, John. So we're going to take a quick break right here. And when we come back, we will talk about your broader sense.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Want to be empowered to take your leadership skills to the next level in your business? Tune into A Sharp Outlook, Best Practices for Success, with host Angela Sharp. Using industry-specific materials, toolkits, and expert guests from all facets of business, our program will empower you to develop a strong core in your business leadership, infrastructure, growth, and technology. A Sharp Outlook airs live every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
America is heading over a fiscal cliff. Home prices are still receding and unemployment growing.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth.
Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You're tuned in to Investing in the Future, Creating Wealth Through Health with Susan Doherty. Got a question or comment today? Please call into the show at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to Susan at thehealthywell.com. Now back to Investing in the Future, Creating Wealth Through Health.
And welcome back to the show. John Kale and I were just having a conversation about how they help their clients and communities with their wellness programming. And as a consultant, and they don't necessarily provide products for it, but they are definitely there to help them. But I also, as I said before, have experienced firsthand their community outreach. They have InnerCare University, where they hold breakfast meetings and invite people from all over the Southern California area, and have some really great information, and they share that in so many ways. And John, tell us a little bit about how you foster health among the community here in San Diego.
Sure. We have, as you mentioned, InnerCare University, which we have 6 to 8 programs of those during the year. So about once a month, and we take the summer off, basically. And InnerCare University is free for anybody who wants to attend. We have it at the lodge at Torrey Pines, and everybody kind of likes that. We serve breakfast. We start at 7:30, and the breakfast starts at 7:30. The program starts a little after 8, and we're done by 9:15, 9:20. We do an evaluation. Everybody fill out an evaluation. Everybody's out by 9:30. And we have a whole series of educational programs that we have done and that we will do. We try to make every program relevant. We try to make it timely. We try to have entertaining as well as educational speakers. And so many times our programs will be designed based on the evaluation of the people that attend. We generally get between 90 and 140 people, depending on what the topic is, what the time of the year it is, and so forth. And so it's been very successful for us. We like it. We've been doing it for almost 5 years now and have a really good history of having very well-designed and very entertaining programs. We're also involved with the County of San Diego. The County of San Diego, for people who don't know about it, has a leading-edge program that's being copied really around the nation. And it's called Live Well San Diego. And it's a 10-year study. It's a 10-year program. And they're just now going to, in fact, next Monday, will be at the city council meeting. They'll be mentioning and giving an update on Live Well San Diego. It's a county program. Be at the county supervisor, not the city council. The county supervisors. And they'll have a video of what they've done recently. And the brains behind it is a guy by the name of Nick Maggione, who is the Health and Human Service Director for San Diego. It was his project. And we had some input to it, and as did a lot of other people. And it's just really a terrific program. And what the attempt is to make San Diego a healthier place to live, to have healthier employees, therefore attract more employers. And so we can say that San Diego is healthier than another city. And so that's part of the reason to do it. So that's another thing we're involved with. We have our website, and any of our employers that are clients of ours get a free access to what we call Choose Well, which is a lot of educational material around wellness and health and performance and other activities. So we're very involved. We try to be very involved in the community. We were involved in a project about a year ago that was sponsored by Microsoft. And it was a program of the collaboration between private and public entities to promote wellness. And we got to speak at here in San Diego. It was three places. It was Chicago, San Diego, and Miami. And then they took some of the speakers that they wanted, and we went to Washington and made a presentation in Washington, D.C. to about 70 invited people, and then they live streamed it through the Microsoft system, and so thousands of people watched it. It was really about the collaboration between public and private entities for the promotion of health within a community. So that was very well received, and it was really a fun project that we got involved in. So those are some of the things we do from a community perspective.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but my very first show, which this is our third show here, mm-hmm. was with Live Well San Diego. I had Dale Fleming, who works yep. with Nick, on the show, and we talked extensively about that. It was, you know, it's very informative, and it's just such a great program here in San Diego.
Yep. People really don't know in San Diego, it's kind of, oh, yeah, we do that here. This has really attracted national attention. I mean, Nick Maggione and his team, they get calls and letters and requests and emails to help us do this in other cities. And so it is really it's a cutting-edge type of program.
Well, it's nice to be a leader. And just like you at InterCare are a leader, I know you've done that. One of the other things that I remember from going to some of your breakfast and your InterCare University was that you guys do a big survey, a health survey among employers every year.
We do.
And how is that looking year over year? What are things changing? Do you see the shift?
Yeah, we do. One of the shifts that's taking place in San Diego, and we do it specifically for San Diego, and we're the only ones that have ever done just San Diego. Generally, the surveys done by other firms are generally Southern California. And San Diego is a completely different marketplace than the rest of Southern California, so that's why we zero in on San Diego by itself. Yeah, one of the shifts we're seeing, quite frankly, is the shift toward wellness, and that's not unique. That's all over the country. But one of the things that is unique is we're seeing a shift toward employers wanting to know more about self-funding. San Diego is a fully insured marketplace because of our HMOs. Not a lot of self-funding here, but yet there's a lot of self-funding around the country. And so that has been a trend that we saw. And so consequently, we did a program at InterCare University last month, and we called it 50 Shades of Funding, and kind of a play on words, obviously a popular novel. But 50 Shades of Funding was about what kind of self-funding is available to you, what's partially self-funded, what's fully insured. And so we did a program that was very, very well received in terms of self-funding. So that's a trend that we're seeing. We're seeing that employers are becoming more intense with requiring accountability from their employees. The day of healthcare as a entitlement from a mid-level employer, those days are over, that the employee is going to have to do something, participate in some type of program, participate in some improvement of their health, participate in some type of health risk appraisal or biometrics or something like that in order to pay the best premium, lower premium than what others who don't participate will be. So you're going to see accountability of the consumer becoming one of the trends going forward. And the employer today, who spends 73% of the cost of healthcare, the employer pays for, no matter what funding method you're using, they're saying they're going to start to get some more for their money, and they're going to ask for more accountability. So it's going to be
interesting. We have to do that. I think that's personal responsibility and accountability. We can't just keep expecting everyone else to pay our bills. So, John, you and I can talk for hours because I think we're both extremely passionate about, the world of wellness and especially corporate wellness. I came from that background and it's always been highly, exciting to me as I've gotten more and more into it. I don't have the 30 years that you have in it, but I just want to thank you so much for taking time and sharing all your vast amount of knowledge and what great things you guys are doing over at InterCare, because I think you're on the leading edge. You have been, especially for corporate wellness from a broker standpoint. And, I hope you get, a lot more competition because I think we need a lot of it, but people have a long way to go to catch up with you, I know. So I want to thank you again for being on the show with me.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. It's fun. Be happy to do it anytime in the future. You'd like to do it again, and be more than happy to do it.
Sounds perfect. Thank you, John. Take care.
Thank you.
Okay, so my guest next week is Justin Belante, CEO of BioIQ. BioIQ is a game changer in the outcomes-based world of biometric screenings. They have a world-class system for delivering data to the employee as well as the employer. They start with several screening options that are safe and convenient to administer, making it easy on the employee. A no-excuses approach, if you will. They also employ today's technology and a user-friendly approach to engage the employee. So I hope everyone will come back next week and learn how the BioIQ real-time dashboard drives action and motivates employees, gives them a place to go. And Justin is fascinating and very, very knowledgeable about the technology coming up. I look forward to you tuning in next week and speaking with you again. Thank you all. Have a great week.
Thanks for tuning in today to Investing in the Future, Creating Wealth Through Health. Please join your host, Susan Doherty, again next Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great and overall healthy week.